This podcast was first released on the Elite Podcast and is reproduced with permission. Thank you for listening to Disruptive Adventism. Welcome back to the Elite Podcast. Jose here, filling in for Ryan Becker. This is season four of the EC3 Conference Podcast. And we're here with another name that you may know and you may have heard, Carlton Byrd. He is the pastor, speaker, Breath of Life, and at Oakwood University, right?
That's correct.
And it's amazing for him to share some leadership tips, leading ideas, you know, that are coming up in the future. So how's it going for you?
Doing well. Glad to be here at the EC3 conference. Glad to meet you. Privilege for me to share. And so I'm grateful to that Lord for this privilege and opportunity.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. For those of people that may be listening and they don't know who you are, can you give us a couple of sentences? Where are you from? What do you do right now? I did mention Breath of Life. And tell us, what's your favorite kind of food?
All right. So I am a native of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, but I'm a PK, a preacher's kid. So we moved from place to place. So when I was born, my parents were at the seminary there at Andrews on the campus there. And my mother wanted to have her children at home, her birth home, which was Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So we went there. She went there and I was born. I am a twin. And so I have a twin brother. He's 5 minutes older than I am. I have a sister. We primarily grew up in Florida. My father pastored in the state of Florida. My mother was a church school teacher, eventually became superintendent of education for one of our conferences in Florida. And so I grew up a PK. For the past 25 years, I've served as a pastor in three different conferences, South Central Conference, Southwest Region Conference, South Atlantic Conference, and now I'm back in the South Central Conference. I have the privilege of serving as the pastor of the Oakwood University Church on the campus of Oakwood University in Huntsville, Alabama, and also serving as the speaker director for Breath of Life Television Ministries here for North America.
Do not forget, what's your favorite kind of food?
Oh, favorite kind of food. I love Chinese food. Love Italian food. I would say, yeah. I want to also mention, I'm happily married to my wife, Danielle, on December 21. We will be celebrating our 22nd wedding anniversary. We are three daughters. Kristen, she's a freshman at Oakwood University. She's 18. Kaylee, she is a high school junior at Oakwood Evidence Academy. She's 16. And then we have a five-year-old, Carissa, who is a kindergartner at Oakwood Evidence Academy.
That's awesome. That's great. And I think God has blessed you definitely in your ministry. Here at the Lead Podcast, we're definitely focusing on the next leaders, the thought leaders, the elders that are out there trying out new things. In your time as a pastor, what's one lesson that you have learned that allows yourself first, of course, to model and to seek from others the engagement that we need? Your presentation today dealt with engaging people, right? And making that everybody contributes,
right,
to the makeup of the church. So what are some of the reflections that you have that you can think of that you yourself were engaged in the work, and how to motivate others to be engaged in that work as well?
Well, I think first of all, we must lead by example. I think that people respond when we're pastors or elders or leaders in our local churches. I think that people respond, they do respond by what we say, but they also respond by what they see us do. So I think in terms of engaging our churches and engaging our church members, we as leaders have to first be engaged ourselves. So it can't be do as I say, not as I do. It must be do as I do and do as I say. And I don't want to say do as I say per se to be autocratic, but I think you get my point. The point is we need to lead by example. So we have to model service. We have to model, we're talking about evangelism here at this conference. We have to model that for people in order for people to buy in. And I think it's easier for them to say, oh, if the leader is doing it, hey, let me roll up my sleeves and let me be a part of that as well. So the first thing I would say is we have to model that. Second thing I would want to say is in terms of leading, in terms of engaging people, we have to promote, model, and embody excellence. We live in a world now where people have access to things, you know, via the internet and whatnot, and technology. And so with whatever we do, we need to model excellence, because people can record what we do and they can disseminate the information and whatnot. So people need to see not only the leader engaged and involved, but people also need to see excellence in what we project and what we provide in terms of ministry.
Talking about that excellence that you're hoping for, the Seventh-day Adventist Church has a complex, you know, the perfection complex. We like to perfect things. We like to be perfect. And even some members have a theological thinking that we should be perfect, right? But the reality is that we have shortcomings.
Right.
And as individuals, we are sinners. And, you know, as leaders, we fail. How have you been able to embrace failure when it has come to your life?
Well, the first thing I want to say is, in terms of that question, I have learned we have to be resilient. Okay. We preach it in our theology as pastors, as evangelists. We tell people the familiar cliche, saints are just sinners who fell down but get right back on up. And so with our leadership in our churches, we have to understand nothing beats a failure but a try. And so you must try. And that doesn't mean every idea will be a stroke of genius. That doesn't mean every initiative will be awesome or great. But the only way we learn is from our challenges, from our mistakes. And so with that, I would suggest to individuals, you got to try and you have to fail. And as leaders, we have to give people room, including ourselves, room to fail, because that's the only way we're going to grow. And then after that, we have to be resilient and we have to bounce back on up. We can't continue in a pity party, if you will, or down in the dumps. We have to bounce back and we have to be resilient. So I think in leadership, that's a big quality that is needed. Resiliency, you know, if you will, that if it's a personal tragedy, you have to respond and you know, you'll bleed a little while, but then you got to get up. If it's a professional challenge, you may bleed a little while, but you have to get up. But that's the only way we're going to grow. And so I want to encourage others to understand the importance of being resilient. I was very, very encouraged a couple of days ago. In fact, I was at the North American Division year-end retreat, and a high-ranking leader within our division came to me and they said, I just want you to know I admire you. And I said, oh, well, thank you. And I said, well, why? And he said, because I found you to be very resilient. And so I think that's a good thing for all of us as leaders, resilient. You know, every board meeting is not going to be a great board meeting. There are going to be some differences, you know. Every nominating committee process is not going to be peaches and cream. There are going to be some challenges, but you have to be resilient and you have to be able to bounce on back up and move forward.
Thanks for listening to Disruptive Adventism. We'll be right back after the break. Being a preacher's kid, I assume that you saw your father, you know, take a lot of critique, you know, and criticism even to some points in life. And you yourself have gotten criticism, you know, from the things that you do or things that you may say, you know, and people have different opinions than you do. A lot of pastors, a lot of elders are always like, you know, trying to find a way to contribute to the work of God. But that contribution sometimes comes, you know, you're going to get critique, you're going to get criticism. How do we deal with that in a positive way?
Well, I think we have to first understand that the key to failure is trying to please everybody. If you're pleasing everyone, then you're not doing your job. Okay, our job as pastors, we are to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. And so you have to know that going in. If you're going to do anything different, if you're going to do anything creative or innovative, then you have to understand there's going to come a level of criticism or a level, you know, just of evaluation, assessment, and people may not see it the way you do. But you have to move forward. When the Lord tells you to move forward and you move forward with tact and you're not trying to be mean to people, you know, you move forward in faith and God will bless your efforts. I have learned when you're trying to facilitate or promote change in the church, the Lord has blessed me with the privilege of being able to pastor mother churches, if you will. And I'll often tell people in the mother church, there are going to be some things that I do that's going to raise an eyebrow. But let's concentrate and let's talk about those things that we do agree on. And we'll concentrate on those things that we do agree on. There'll be some things we don't necessarily see eye to eye on, but we have to understand it's all for God's glory. Lunacy is defined as thinking you can do the same things and expect or get the same or different result. That's lunacy. That's not going to happen. You can't do the same thing over and over and get a different result. You have to try something different. You have to try something new. So therefore, you have to make sure that, number one, whatever you try does not conflict with thus saith the Lord. It does not conflict with what the word of God says. Then number two, those things that do challenge the orthodoxy or do challenge what is familiar or do challenge tradition, there's a way you go about instituting that. And, you know, so it may not be where we may not be where we should be, but praise the Lord, we're not where we used to be. So we have to, you know, move people along. And so I think you get farther, faster when you try to get people to go along with you on the journey as opposed to alienating them in the process of the journey.
Very well. I like the alliteration there. That was good. And I think it helps us see that it takes collaboration. It takes two or more people to be in the leadership team and move forward. A lot of our churches for the past couple of years, maybe even decades now, we have gotten to the culture of the superstar within our team. We have a team of leaders, and the pastor usually will be the superstar, the one that can know everything, take the accounting, do the church building, lead the nominating committees, go to the other committees, and so on and so forth. In your talk, you kind of emphasized the value of collaboration and the priesthood of all believers, after all. We are seeing a shift in Adventism right now, where the superstar evangelists, the superstar pastors are starting to diminish. You know, not they're still there, but how do you see that shift in culture, and how can we help make everybody know that they're needed and special for the work of God?
I think you're correct in terms of we're kind of moving away from that. If you will, become we're becoming more decentralized. That's not just not in government. That's also in personnel and how we do things. That's also reflective in our dress. You know, everything we're moving is different. You know, the ground is level at the cross. That's not necessarily a bad thing, particularly when the leader is secure in him or herself. They're okay. You know, everyone has been given gifts and we all operate within our giftedness. I do think that it's going to become even greater as time goes on. I also feel, however, on the flip side, we should not penalize those leaders who God has truly blessed with specific gifts for his glory. You know, we need to celebrate that, promote that, and encourage that. But we are, I think, moving into a scenario where priesthood of all believers, ground is level at the cross, we can all do something to build God's kingdom. I think that's going to be reflected in our size, in terms of our church sizes, you know. We're going to see it as well. Now, I wanted you to pick up the last part of your question. Repeat that one more time.
The last part is about, you know, how can we incentivize that shift to happen faster and go further and farther, you said?
Further, farther, to pick faster. Up on you.
Okay. Yes.
And they're pretty much the same thing, further and farther, but tomato, tomato. How can that go faster? I think, Jose, some things just happen naturally. I think that there are things that are happening in 2019 as we approach 2020 that are happening at a greater pace than what happened before. And so I think that we can help, as you say, incentivize that or intentionally help move that along. If we don't, society alone will make that happen. It will foster that shift. There are things, as you know, that we're doing now that we probably never thought or would dream that we do, and the pace, the rapidity in which it's done. I think some things are just societal. For example, all right, let's take our cell phones. You know, 10, 15 years ago, we were just happy with a flip phone. And now, you know, it's not even a cell phone, it's a smartphone. We can do everything with it now. That's a societal or cultural change or practice, if you will. Well, I think the church is a microcosm of that. There are just some things that are just going to happen simply because of the world we live in. And we've got to move, of course, with the times. And so I think we can help that along intentionally. But I'll just be honest with you, even if we don't help it along, it naturally will happen.
And that is a reflection of society, as you said. I'd like you to maybe take, we're going to take a little bit of a detour to the idea of who helped you see the vision that you have now. You know, you have pastored in different places, but we are definitely trying to emphasize the value of mentorship in the Seventh-day Adventist Church for pastors, for leaders, pastors to be coaches for their elders and for their deacons, and for ministerials to be coaches to their pastors, and so on and so forth, you know, to provide a sustainable system. But who was the person that kind of sparked that need for you to be engaged in the work?
Well, my father is a pastor. And so with that, I was able to watch him. Some of it was consciously, some was unconsciously, but I was able to watch and observe him. Seeing people coming into a saving relationship with Christ has always been a passion of mine. I just think the Lord put that in me. But seeing my dad operate and see him do certain things, of course, that was a model to be able to look at. He always used to share with me, he said, son, you'll be that much better pastor than I, because you'll know what to do and what not to do based on my experience. So I think that's one. Another, my father-in-law, he's a pastor as well. And so therefore, kind of the same premise. You're able to observe, you're able to model consciously and unconsciously, and what to do, what not to do. My godfather is a pastor, has been a church leader, conference president, church leader and whatnot. Same premise. And then, you know, a lot of things after you move towards from those three individuals, a lot of reading, you know, you read, and then a lot of exposure. Travel helps you. You're able to see different things, but not just things within our faith group, but things within other faith groups. I would make it a practice and have made it a practice to visit other faith groups, whether it's their church services, whether they're physical plants, whether it's their church schools, whatever it is, to get ideas that broaden you, that you're not able to, you don't look at things in a myopic, you know, viewpoint, but you're able to see things from a broad perspective. And so I would dare to say and suggest to those who are listening, exposure through best practices is critical.
You mentioned going to other faith groups, and a lot of leaders sometimes may be afraid of doing that. Do you remember an instance, a story where you went to another faith group, or like maybe, you know, a conference or whatever it is, and you were like, wow, that really captivated me?
So I'll share one in particular, specifically. When I pastored in Houston, Texas, I told my church board we would have board meeting and we were going to go to a Lakewood church. Lakewood Church, as you know, is in Houston, in America. It's our largest attending Christian church, non-denominational. The pastor is Joel Osteen. And as a church board, we went there not for doctrine, but we went there to say, listen, how is it that thousands of people each and every Sunday are coming to attend this church? In fact, the attendance there is greater than most of our conference camp meetings. I would dare to say the only thing we as the Seventh-day Adventist Church in North America that we have in greater attendance than what they have at the Lakewood Church at their weekly worship experience is the general conference in session. So here, they do this every week. And so the level of precision, the level of intentionality, the physical plant, how they conducted their service, how they were secret sensitive to those in attendance, all of those things were very, very, very good for me to be able to glean and say, this is why they're attracting these numbers. Okay. And sometimes we look at that and say, oh, well, it's because, you know, what we preach and what we teach and our doctrinal message is very different. The reality is many visitors don't know what we preach or teach till we open our mouths. They don't know. So if we could shore up some of those other things, our physical plants, our information technology, our worship experience, if we can shore some of those things up, I think that would serve as a way to be more inviting, if you will, to others to be able to want to attend our church and at least find out what we're doing. So when we talk about exposure, we talk about best practices, that is one. Little things. Some days, Jose, I'll just go through on the internet and I'll just search church websites just to look and see what churches are doing within our denomination and also those that are not necessarily in our denomination. Just to be exposed, to see what people are doing. You have to stay cutting edge. I think sometimes we have some initiatives within our faith group that are very, very good. But just because you were first in the market doesn't mean you have a corner on the market. And so I think it's very, very important to sharpen your skill set, sharpen your tools. That's what this conference is about. You know, hopefully for those who attend, including myself, even as a presenter, that there is something that is said, something that motivates us, something that we see that says, hey, let me go try to that in my church or in my parish or in my community. And I think that's what this thing's all about. So I think modeling those individuals I spoke of to education, be it reading or whatever. And then number three, exposure, particularly exposure through best practices.
A lot of individuals in our churches and definitely a lot of people have a turnover of the pastor. You know, we have different leaders modeling different things for members at all times. Sometimes pastors last 3-4 years, but sometimes they last less. And with such a turnaround ratio, and the church is a church district, right? Some pastors may not be able to model the change that they want to see. How can we get better at that from a conference perspective, from, you know, talking about leadership, in our system that sometimes prevents innovation or sometimes hinders it, sometimes, and sometimes actually aids it. But how can we be more of a system that models that positivity and that change in the future?
Well, number one, I think we all have to accept the Seventh-day Adventist Church is a movement, okay? And so we automatically deal with pastoral tenure very differently than how our brothers and sisters of other faiths do. I listened to some young pastors say, we need to stop all the transfers. We need to stop all that. We change about people too quickly. That's good when you're pastoring that medium-sized to large church because you feel you have the human, the economic, and physical plant resources to be able to do some things and really make an indelible impression. But when you're in that entry-level district, I don't know of many individuals who are saying, I want a storied tenure here in terms of longevity. They're like, let me do my time and I like to learn some things, then move to the next thing. So I think, one, there needs to be a recognition of the fact we are a movement. Things are going to change, but it's just what it is, okay? There needs to be cognition of that. Number two, we need to be cognizant of that. Number two, we do need to do a better job with placement, where we assign persons to pastor. I think we're trying to do a better job, but tenure cannot be the sole criterion for placement, okay? So if a pastor's been in the ministry 10, 15 years, then they're ready now for this. That can't be the sole criterion. It needs to be more gifts-based. Okay, that's tough, but we could do a better job with that.
You're definitely, I don't want to cut you off, but in this section, I think it resonates with a lot of younger pastors who may be in that first level one starting district, right? But those places can shape you. Right. And they can help you for the future. As you said, we're a movement. Continue. Maybe I'll like to let you finish before I ask the question of what is the change that needs to be breathed in this section? So maybe you can address that as well.
OK, so we first talk about cognition or being cognizant, I should say, of what our system is and our movement. Secondly, do a better job of placement. Third, there are some things that are just general to all churches, particularly when we talk about evangelism, we talk about growth. There are just some things that are different. I mean, the same. That message is the same. We all want to grow. Okay. Now, the methods by which we go through that process might be different, but the takeaway is we all want to grow. I think we got to hammer that point home. And I think, Jose, we've got to hammer that home, particularly at our large gatherings, specifically. Many persons who are members of our churches in smaller, rural, or remote areas, they still are very strong when it comes to camp meeting attendance or different conference initiatives. And I think perhaps we need to do a better job leveraging or capitalizing on these things and almost give, not necessarily a state of the conference, but really a charge to the membership, this is where we're going. So that everyone understands if one of the goals for the conferences, youth and young adults and their recruitment and retention. If we say that at our large gatherings, in addition, because it has to be both and not either or, in addition to putting that in our print media, in our social media, in our websites, we do all kinds of stuff. Everyone will understand, look, as a conference, this is what we're trying to do. So if Jose leaves as pastor and John or Sally become the pastor, the mindset is still, we're trying to grow here. And our emphasis is youth and young adults and their recruitment and retention. So there may be a different way of going about it with a different pastor, but the underlying goal is the same. So I think that we need to be a bit more intentional and deliberate about our messaging. Okay. So that's digitally, that's paper, but that's also spoken. That we need to do a better job with that.
Hope you're enjoying our discussion. We'll be right back after this ad break. It seems to me that you're mentioning the idea of unity and purpose. You know, have that unity and purpose and all have that same goal and kind of branded through the conference. One more question before we come to our final time. is that a lot of leaders, sometimes they feel alone. We talked about those churches that are in remote areas and that pastor that may be in the first level district. How can they ask the conference, other leaders, thought, you know, cutting edge people for help? How can I, a pastor of a 3-church, 4-5 church district, ask for help so that you can model something for me, so I can model it for other people and they can model it for the community?
I think first of all, we have to be honest with ourselves, both sides. Conference office, who is supposed to provide the resources that you need, be it training or whatever, monies. And then the local pastor in the local church as well, honest, okay, if this is done for us, if we're supported with resources, that we're going to be diligent in our utilization of them. So I think honesty is important. I think also transparency is important. Laura has me pastoring the Oakwood University Church, large church, and I'm grateful for this privilege and opportunity. The reality is, though, I began in a 3-church district in Southern Mississippi. One of the churches only had 2 members. And I can very, very well remember my experience there. And I have not forgotten that. And so as I'm where I am now, I can't have amnesia and act like, well, I always used to have 40 elders and I always used to have 60 deacons and whatnot. No, that's abnormal. And I think being now where I am, I have to be transparent with the pastor who is at that smaller church or in that multiple church district and say to him, say to her, listen, I've been there. Now, what you're dealing with and what I'm dealing with is very different because every situation, every scenario is different. But I need you to understand, I've been there. And so therefore, I have to make sure I'm not condescending to them because I've been there. And the reality is, just because I've been there and I'm not there now doesn't mean the Lord won't put me back there. But I think that we have to be honest. We have to be transparent. The person who is in the leadership role or in the larger scenario, we have to make sure we're not condescending, that we try to not just sympathize, but empathize, recognizing that not too long ago we were there. And there has to be mutual learning. There has to be mutual growth. For me, you know, I'm one of the presenters here at EC3, but through questions people have asked me, through conversations, I grow too. You know, it's a blessing for me. And so I think that none of us can ever get to the point where we've arrived. We just can't, that we've arrived. We're still growing. We're still learning. And so with that, you know, if there were a person who would speak with me, I would say, listen, now, when I was there, this is what some of the things I did. Maybe they're a blessing to you. Maybe they're not. The person could either take some of the ideas. If the person does not take any of the ideas, at least the person knows, you know, I can talk to him. He's approachable. He gets it. He understands. And I think that goes a long way. We will never be compensated to the point where that meets all of our needs. So I think a lot of times just affirmation, confirmation, encouragement. So whether they took the ideas or not, just the fact that I'm sitting listening and I'm sharing some things through my experience that I had formerly had, I think is a blessing to them.
Elder Bird, thank you very much. And we would like to give you like maybe a final thoughts, challenge that you may have for the leaders, like that are listening, the people, like, you know, elders, pastors, even conference officials. What's that challenge that we need to have and remember?
Stay faithful. Stay faithful. And you're looking forward to hearing God say, well done. This is a calling. And the Lord called you to this. And so you got to stay faithful to him and stay faithful to the calling that he has put on your life. I want to specifically speak to those persons who may be in smaller situations and they feel they're alone and they're by themselves. I want to encourage you and I want you to know that God blesses people, not places. And so the blessings of God are on you. Never forget that. The blessings of God are on you. And when you're faithful, I believe that God rewards faithfulness. And so that's my encouragement to everyone, wherever you are, remain faithful. Remain faithful to God. Remain faithful to your calling. And the blessings of God are on people, not places or positions.
You've been listening to Disruptive Adventism. We hope that today's topic helped you to think and change something about your practices, about your faith, about your Adventism. If you want to subscribe, make sure to go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast. We'll be there. And make sure to give us a review if you like what you're listening to. If you want to support, make sure to go to patreon.com/disruptiveadventism. It helps us pay our bills and produce the content that you're listening to. And if you want to socialize, make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram or on Twitter, and hit us up whenever you need anything. We'll be there to support you. Thank you for listening today. We hope you join us next time. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.